Well, everyone, thanks for tuning in. Again, you're stuck with me this week. Our own hero, Jim Reed, is off taking care of business. So I am your host tonight. I am Chris Jones. You can find me 5B5 on Twitter or 5x5 in the PokerStars home game. And this is the Rec Poker Podcast Forums edition. And as always, we are sponsored by the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. We want to thank for them for their support and remind you that they have a really big tournament series coming up in March. The MSPT is coming back to town. They've got a series of really great events associated with that. And so check out their website or the MSPT website to get a sense of that schedule. But it's a really good time. They run a great tournament series. The staff there are really professional. It's got a good vibe and environment, and hope to see some of you there. But we could not make the show without also our Wrecking Crew members who join us and give us their wisdom and thoughts and ideas. So besides me, who else is joining us tonight?
I am John Zomsky, also known as Poker Geek MN everywhere.
I'm Kim Kilroy. I'm PatBat33, almost everywhere.
And I'm Rob Washam, and I'm Radman50, just about everywhere.
Well, and tonight we are talking about kind of an interesting forums post sent to us by Eric Anderson. And he's wondering about when, if ever, do we play soft? I know that we're technically not supposed to in terms of colluding, but when, if ever, do we, is there sort of like this unspoken soft play to bust someone out of a tournament? So the scenario, I'll read the forum post that Eric gives us, and then let's chat about this, because I thought it was an interesting subject for us to kind of explore. So Eric writes, he's in a tournament. The low jack shoves for six big blinds, which I think these situations always come up when somebody is very short stacked. Like that's the kind of situation where we might even start to have this kind of question in our mind about whether we should do this. He says, we call in the button and then the big blind calls. So we've all called, we're all in here, or we're not all in, neither is the big blind, but the low jack is, and there's no side pot, which we're going to talk about. I think that's a big factor here. The flop comes and you catch a piece. He doesn't really give an example here, but let's say you call with ace jack and the flop is an ace high flop. Or a jack, let's say it's a jack high flop, even, you know, it's jack 8-4, you have ace jack. And now he's wondering, what do we do? We've got this all in player, we've got a decent piece of this flop. We certainly don't have the nuts by any sense of the imagination. And so Eric writes, what drives your decision to either play passively to keep the big blind in the pot, to reduce LoJack's equity and help ensure that they bust out, or to play aggressively and try to win the chips yourself, not to mention the chips that you could win if Big Blind calls you and has a worse jack or something in the scenario I just... should we ever play passively? Of course we bet with the nuts, he says, but what if we have the nut flush draw or an overpair on a board, like on that jack high board? Let's say we had queens. We've all been there when someone bluffs the would-be winner out of the pot with a draw and then ends up giving that low jack player a triple up. That doesn't make you very popular, he says. Does making the money make you any more or less likely to bet? How about if it is still at a re-entry stage? So let's talk about the stage of the tournament. So basically the ultimate question is, how important is it to ensure or to maximize the bust out of this player versus trying to play the hand according to how you might normally play these spots? Does anyone have any thoughts about this to start?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. Kim.
I think it's irrelevant if it's not on the bubble or close to a bubble or close to a pay jump. And if there's no side pot, it doesn't, in my opinion, it doesn't really matter. whether there's a side pot or not. If you're not in one of those particular situations, it doesn't matter if you double up or triple up the other person. If you have equity, you want to push the equity and build your own stack. And you want to build a side pot, especially when you have equity. But I don't agree that you should totally bluff a person that might take the other player out off of a hand when you don't have any equity, when there's no side pot and mm-hmm. no chips to be won.
So you would differentiate, like, we have the nut flush draw on the, let's say this, we had this, I can't remember what board. Let's say we have a jack 9-6 board, and we've got the ace, and it's a two-tone board with two clubs. We have ace deuce of clubs on the jack 9-6 board. Jack and the nine are clubs. If we have ace deuce of clubs, that's a board that we probably want to attack a little bit. But if we had like just some no equity bluff, and it's a dry side pot, that's one where we might want to like slow our roll a little.
Right. So just so people know, a dry side pot is when there's no money in a side pot, when the only money to be won is in the main pot, which we have our all in player in.
Right. And that, what that means is not only do we have to beat the other player in this, but we have to get any of this. Remember, this player put themselves all in, right? So like they have a hand, could still be better than our hand in any of these scenarios. And we have to not only beat the other player who still has live chips behind them that can bet and call, we have to beat the player who has gone all in to win any part of this pot if it's a dry side pot.
Unless we build a side pot,
right,
and then somehow get chips from the other player.
Right. So your differentiation is, do we have equity? Like we're probably not running any no equity bluffs. I mean, we don't do that very often anyway, but we would probably be less incentivized to do it here, because what can happen then, as Eric points out, is that we can fold out the other player who might have beaten the player who would then be sort of kicked out or bust out of the tournament.
But I think it's a really good spot to run to do a no equity bluff when there's a side pot.
Yes. 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 Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Rob or John, what do you have any things to add to this?
Well, I did answer this post, and I mentioned just a couple of things that didn't come up, but no matter what stage of the tournament you're in, when somebody busts, you gain equity. So in an ICM situation, it's always an ICM situation in the tournament. It's just not a really big ICM equity increase, but there is still an ICM equity increase. So it's advantageous to bust somebody out, you know, and if you double him up, I mean, he's going to be in there again, putting more chips in. And if he doubles up again, I mean, he could be a chip leader in three or four hands. So it's always a good thing to be able to bust somebody from a tournament. If you have little to no equity, and like Kim mentioned, if there's no side pot, there's no reason to bet somebody off of a hand. Your other opponent that can take this guy out. So what I generally do is I would not bet out unless I had a very strong hand on the flop that was almost guaranteed to take out the all-in player. Now, it's funny because I've been in situations in live poker tournaments where this situation comes up where there's two of us have called an all in, and then I or the other person will make a bet at the pot on the flop, and the other person, me or the other person, would fold. And then two or three other people in the tournament or on the table will spout out and say, "Hey, what are you doing? You know, you shouldn't be doing that."
Yeah.
You know, because there's,
I've heard that very often.
Yes. There's this assumption that we should casually collude
yep.
to take this player out. And so it's kind of an interesting situation because I've run into that a number of times where people have said that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do think that there is a sense that this is like some people carry this around with them. Like this is a unspoken rule that you all should know. And when you don't, you violated something grand and I do agree with sort of what Kim's take here is that our goal, I mean, there are certain situations, I think, like if we're in a satellite and this happens, and like especially if this is like the seat that'll get us to the end game, if you bet there, you should be put in poker jail, right? Like that is just, even if you got the nuts, I mean, you're just checking down and it's just, you know, like let's see where we get end up. But most situations we're trying to capture chippy V. We're trying to increase our stack and sort of build up our chance of winning this tournament. And part of our chance of winning this tournament would be knocking out this player, but we're going to have a better chance if we also get a lot of big blinds chips in the situation that Eric points out. So when we have that opportunity, I think that there is that unspoken rule is one that I don't pay a lot of attention to. And when people yell at you for it, you just kind of have to have some thick skin about, I know what I'm doing and it's okay. You can still think I don't know what I'm doing, but that's fine.
I agree. It's kind of funny.
I tend to agree with that. However, betting into a try side pot is a stronger action than just making a continuation bet.
Mm-hmm.
So you do need to factor that in. In other words, you need to have a little bit of a stronger hand in order to make that worthwhile. You also don't want to, at any point in the tournament, you probably don't want to just do an outright, like, let's say you have the nut low. You never want to bet into it there because then you are actually losing equity by betting because you're almost guaranteed not to win it from the player that's all in. Whereas you do gain a little bit of equity, like Rob said, if they go out.
Yeah,
and if you have no equity, no chance of winning it, there's no value.
Go ahead, Kim.
Okay. I was just going to say there's one situation where I would find it acceptable on the bubble to bet into a dry side pot. And that would be if I was the massive chip leader and I'm bullying the bubble.
Ah.
And I want to continue to bully the bubble. And I don't care if this short stack doubles up because there's another little short stack with five big blinds on the table. So now I would try and get rid of the other person so that I can continue to bully the bubble and get chips that way.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. I like that.
Well, and
that's a great
the counterpart to that is if the side pot is large, the fact that someone is all in is meaningless. Like, right. Let's say it was raised to three big blinds pre, and the big blind happened to only have one big blind left. So there's like 9 or 10 chips in the pot. At that point in time, or 6 or 7 or whatever, go for the pot because most of the pot is still live.
Right.
And you want to make sure that you're winning that portion of the pot.
Right. Right. So let me ask you this from the opposite perspective. If you're, so we've got this same situation. You're in the big blind, Jack-9-6, two-tone board with two clubs. It's Jack-9-6 and with two clubs. And now you're in the big blind, and there's been this situation where somebody went all in, the button called, and you've called. You check, and the button bets, c-bets. What is your approach when you don't have the nuts? Because you should read that as a strong, as you mentioned, John, that's a stronger action that they've just taken. How strong do we have to now get to continue along into this situation?
Again, I think this depends on what stage of the tournament you're in. If you're in the accumulation stage, I would just raise as I normally would here with the nut flush draw and get all the chips in if I have to. Mm-hmm. But if I'm on a bubble, I'm just going to call and play it very passively, trying to hit my draw.
Mm-hmm. 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 Everyone like that? And so Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if I quite agree with that. I'm trying to think. Because I would read that as the person who made the bet probably has top pair or better. So you'd really need to look at your equity and if you think you have the right fold equity to get that, because you're probably behind. I mean, you have two draws to get your outs if you're going for the nut flush there. But you're still behind, so you have to have enough fold equity to make up for that.
Yep. I'm assuming that they both have like 30, 40 big blinds or something like that, that we're not. I would get all the chips in there if we weren't at a stick, like on the flop, if we were still in the accumulation phase of the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess what I'm saying is, how does the fact that there's no side pot, it's a dry side pot.
There is a side pot because the button just
bet. But when they bet.
No, I understand. But when they bet, there was no side pot.
Right.
How does that alter their range? And how does that affect your equity when you push? And I honestly don't know the answers to that.
Because I guess
what to me, it's not. What I'm saying is their hand has become stronger. Has it become stronger enough that you are losing your fold equity enough?
I guess it also sort of depends if we think that there's any chance that they're betting with a worse club draw, right? Like, are they betting with king queen of clubs? If we've got ace deuce of clubs or whatever, that's obviously the almost the dream scenario if that's happening. But if they're not, if it's top pair or better, and there's like they're not really doing. They're only doing nut flushes and they can't because we have it. Like if in this situation,
and I think I guess if we cover them as well, I think that.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. I guess I'm kind of reacting to the people who, if your opponent is someone who lives by the rule that we all just said we don't agree with.
Right.
Then
right.
There's a very good chance they have trips or better, or right. at least two pair, which means your fold equity is almost nil. In which case, I think shoving is not a positive expectation play.
Because they're not going to fold, and we're not going to hit our flush often enough against that right. strong of a holding, and you know our ace probably isn't even good,
right? And probably the better, the higher level the tournament is, the less that's true. Mm-hmm. So the more what Kim says goes true, whereas yep. some of the lower level tournaments, people might follow the never bet it into a dry side pot rule
without the nuts, right? And so, they've got to have jack on that board,
right?
Well, that's interesting too. I think that is really important to understand the type of opponent that is taking that action too in all of these kind of spots.
We're giving them a tighter range than a stronger range than we would just give a C better. For instance,
yes, for sure,
right.
Check raise the C bet, right? The continuation.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a really good conversation. It's one we really want to be thinking about a decent amount. But also, I think there's also do you have a thought about when you're in these kind of spots? Maybe there's just in general where people at the table have reacted to something that you have done. You might believe that you've made the right choice. You might believe very strongly that they're all wrong, but there's this sort of reaction of like, what are you doing? You know, you're breaking the holy rules of poker here. And you're sort of like getting some of that kind of, do you just ignore it? Do you try to speak to like defend your strategy? What's your sort of take on how to approach that kind of situation?
I told someone off at the table the other day that wasn't telling me off. They were telling another player that they shouldn't have bet into the pot. And we were nowhere near any money or anything. Like we were like so early in the tournament that it made absolutely no difference at all if this player stayed in or went out.
Uh-huh.
Right. And someone had like second pair and was just protecting their hand. And the other guy, I guess, would have rivered a bigger pair or something, and he'd forced him out. And the original person won the pot.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, I don't know. I said it doesn't really matter at this stage of the tournament. You know, let him play the way he wants to play.
I usually say, I wouldn't make mistakes if I was a better player, but, you know, I gotta.
I didn't do it. It was somebody else at the table. And this guy was really berating someone. No, you always check it down. Like, they're going exactly what Eric's saying here. No, you have to check it down when there's someone all in. And I said, it makes absolutely no difference at this stage in the tournament.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
There are some people that keep score just by how many people they outlast. Right.
Yeah. Maybe they had to last longer or something.
I've run into those situations before. And back when I first started playing live a lot, I was very concerned with how people perceived me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of recreational players, when you're new to that environment, you look around and you think everybody around you has been doing this for years and you're just starting out. You have no idea. Well, really, a lot of those people may have been doing it for years, but they've been doing it wrong for years. So it doesn't really matter. But I think there is that that ethos that happens where you feel like you need to justify your actions to everybody at the table so they don't think you're a moron.
Mm-hmm.
And in today, when I play, I love it if they think I'm a moron.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to give me credit for knowing what I'm doing. And I can I can take advantage of that perception of me that I'm inexperienced. I don't know what I'm doing. It's like chip shuffling. Mm-hmm. I don't start shuffling chips until about the third level of the tournament. I don't want anybody to think that I've ever been there before and done that before. So right. I think there's a maturity that you gain after playing for X amount of years, playing live especially, where I kind of get a kick out of it when people berate me or other people. I mean, I'll defend anybody saying, hey, they can play their cards any way they want. It's their cards. But at the same time, I get a kick out of somebody that goes to the extra effort of berating somebody else at the table, because they're usually the one that is very wrong.
Yeah. And I think that goes to something that's, I think, really important in the game too, is like, as we're learning, and especially as we're new, there is this sense of confidence that maybe is lacking sometimes, or like, am I doing the right thing? I don't really know. I'm just learning this game. And like, having that belief in yourself that can be hard to find if you're just like not sure, you know, what you should be doing in a certain situation. You're not entirely sure. And then to have people be like, oh, what are you doing? But I do love what you're saying there, Rob. I mean, I think that is something that if you can embrace that a little and just understand that sometimes if people have a sort of lesser perception of you as a player, that is actually can be an advantage, especially if you do have some elements of strategy where you know what you're doing, right? Because then you can start to use that to your advantage. What I really love is when I get a sense that people think I'm a little like tighter than I am. Because, oh man, it's so great when you just are like three betting all the time and they just think, God, you're just getting aces every hand. It's just like, and you're like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. But yeah, so I think you can really use that to your advantage. And I think if you are being berated for things that you believe you're doing right, if you can find the sort of confidence in yourself to sort of just embrace that, that can be in a very effective way. Because honestly, you're not trying to go to a tournament to establish your reputation, right? I mean, that's like not, maybe if you go to the main event and you're on streaming, you might get a reputation, right? But otherwise, this is not going to do anything on that level. What you're trying to do is accumulate chips, win a tournament. If you win the tournament, maybe you'll establish your reputation. But the only way you're going to do that is to keep playing the way you think you should be playing. So, all right. Well, anything else before we kind of wrap this one up? Hearing none, I will just say very much thanks to Rob, Kim, John. Thanks for being part of this. Thank you to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. We couldn't do this without any of your support. And most of all, thanks to you, the listener.